Hello, and welcome to Forbidden Knowledge. My name is Nathaniel Hoytmacher, and I will be your host. This is Season 1, Episode 1, and we will be talking about the overview of the initiate's journey and or path. Before I get into that, though, I want to make sure that you've all listened to Episode 0, which gives the general formulaic understanding of how each of these episodes as well as series is going to unfold and what to expect from the podcast as a whole. I also want to remind people that each episode builds upon itself, and please go in order and do not skip around because you might miss important information that ties all the rest of it together. With that in mind, we will now continue on with the main program for today. In ancient time periods, there used to be these things called mystery schools. Many of us are maybe never heard of it. Some of us know some things of it and have heard the idea behind it. And so I will be covering kind of what this is, what was expected of the potential neophyte that would become an initiate later on. And we will be going into these basic overview and steps of what was required prior to even beginning to be initiated into anything at all. Some of the schools that people might be familiar with would be the Eleusinian mystery traditions. You might be even something to know of the Mithraic ones or any of the other ones that have to do with ancient Egypt, perhaps. And maybe even ancient Sumeria, but they were all over the world. They weren't in just these places that I mentioned. And they still exist even to this day, although they are not as open and prevalent as they once were. And it doesn't really matter whether you are somebody who believes in spirituality or not, you can still gain a lot of wisdom on how to live life properly based upon the journey that is set forth for the initiates in order to make it so that way they can move on to higher levels of understanding with it. So the first thing is, regardless of what mystery school, regardless of what someone believed in something, regardless of what time period, even to this day, most mystery school traditions then and now never allowed anybody to partake in their sessions and even begin the level of candidacy if they did not believe in a higher power. And the reason for this was very obvious. It has to do with the fact that if you thought that human beings were the highest power that there was on this planet and in this world, and then the universe in general, that it made it so that way this person believed that they were the arbiter of truth and that truth did not exist, which is quite contrary to what the entirety of what the mystery school traditions were about and why they were important for things with it. And even to this day, anybody who thinks that there isn't some form of a higher power, you don't have to call it God if you don't want to, that they're quite frankly delusional. If you think you're the sole arbiter of truth, then wish yourself to, then say that I'm a billionaire and suddenly you're a billionaire, according to you, right? Or that you can go and change the laws of physics. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. You think you can walk off that cliff without doing any, without having any harm come to you and befall upon you because you're the sole arbiter of truth and whatnot. You're delusional. That was the first step, no matter what, in every mystery school and every tradition that had to be dealt with, is that you had to go and know or believe in a higher power. Without this belief that there was something greater than yourself out there, there was no point to any of this stuff. If you think that that's the case for you as well, that there's nothing bigger out there, and then I don't know what to tell you other than that you really need to do some soul searching, because it's just not even close to the parameters of truth and whatnot, and you're not being honest with yourself, which takes us to the next stage of things, which is the person had to learn how to be completely honest. Without this step, being honest with themselves especially, they had to stop lying to themselves about themselves and stop lying to themselves about themselves to other people in the world around them. You couldn't go any further in the initiate's tradition. Why? Because then you were never going to be able to figure out what was real and what wasn't real. You weren't going to make any progress on anything. If you are unable to determine what you actually want out of life, if you're unable to figure out what the truth of your own existence is and why things are the way that they are within you, and be honest that, yeah, I'm actually angry at this person because of whatever it is that you're angry about, or that you feel sad because of this and whatnot, then, you know, there would be a huge problem, a huge disconnect between yourself and the world around you. And this was not something that would be good for anybody whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. And of course, there's also the moral aspect that if you're lying to yourself, you're going to completely stray from the path that needs to be done in order to find out what the truth of things are and to actually make it so that way you can gain wisdom, insight, and potentially true freedom that comes along with all these things. And so this is something else that was very important to people, is that the initiate schools, the mystery schools, that you needed to make it so that way you were honest with yourself and honest with the world around you, because any form of deception to yourself makes it so that way you can't actually progress correctly, and then you also hinder the progress of other people by lying to them. And so this was about morality and cleansing oneself. These are the basics. We will go into much further detail about all these things and why they were important. Each one will probably have its own episode and whatnot. I'm just kind of giving the basic outline and overview of everything here. And so the next stage was to stop dreaming. Now, this does not mean that you can't have aspirations about life, all right? Because that's what it's come to mean now. But in the ancient time periods, dreaming had to do with you imagining a world that was very different from what the way that it actually was, like a dream, to where it wasn't actually a real thing. And so if the model of reality that you have in your head is very different from the model of reality that is actuality, then you're going to make it so that way you're going to have a very hard time sifting through truth and learning how to do anything with that in any way, shape, or form. And the other major part of this is that we call it in psychology today cognitive dissonance. This is where you say one thing but do another, or that you have a belief system that has contradictions within itself and you haven't sorted those out. Well, that's part of the first step of trying to figure out what the truth is, what the higher power is, what is going on, which, just as a reminder, as I covered in episode zero, that truth is not this mystical, magical mumbo-jumbo, like seeing through the eyes of God or something like that. Truth here simply means that which is, aka the facts of the situation that you are dealing with. The facts are that I am talking into my microphone, and you can go and hear that because I've recorded this episode and have posted it up online, and now you're listening to it. Those are facts. That is the truth of the situation. That's all that it has to be for that. It doesn't have to be anything other than that. It doesn't have to be some mystical, magical concept. You know, if I let go of my pen that I'm holding here and let it fall, it will do so every time. That's just the way that it is. It's a fact of nature and life for what's going on. That's all truth is. It's not something that's anything other than that. So, you have to be seeking for a higher power, aka the truth of reality and what's going on with it, and you have to align your perceptions to that truth. And the way that you do this is that you make it so that way you are honest with yourself first and foremost, and with others about what's going on, so that way you can form proper relationships that come from this. Secondly, the next step is that you have to make it so that way you stop holding contradictory views between what the world around you is and what it isn't, and contradictory views about what you think the world is and isn't. Now, that might sound like I said the same thing there, but I didn't. So one is having to do with the external world, and the other one's having to do with the internal world. If you think the sky is green when it's actually blue, then you have a type of misunderstanding that's going on there that's not correct, and your perception is not aligned with reality for whatever reason. And the other one is when you have internal conflict with a worldview to where you're holding two ideas that are simultaneously opposed to one another. A perfect example of this is where you think that it's okay to go and make it so that way you steal something from another person, but then you wouldn't want to be stolen from. You can't have it both ways. It's either okay for people to steal or it's not okay for people to steal. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are that has to do with this. And so this is what we're talking about here when it comes to the cognitive dissonance of things that psychology uses that term today, and for what it means is that you have an internal belief that are in contradiction to one another. You can't have both. Only one or the other is true, or maybe none of them are true, but they can't go together is the point. So after you have made it so that way you've learned how to be honest with yourself and that you've begun the process of detangling things from your internal makeup and belief system and checking it against reality to make sure that it's in alignment with it, the next stage is we move on to how to think. All right? And this was done as a way to help you with the other two stages of the process as well. It was to make it so that way you would learn how to make it so that way you could do all the various different aspects of being honest with yourself as well as about what's going on with the world around you. This was a very important step and should not be taken lightly for things with it. And in the ancient time period, there was something called the trivium and something called the quadrivium. And so the trivium was the most important aspect of this, and because it helped with everything and actually is the precursor to the modern day scientific method. And the quadrivium was a way of quantifying what you found inside of the trivium. And so basically, to be very brief about the summation of what is going on here in terms of how the trivium worked, the first stage is you would go and gather any and all facts that were pertinent to whatever topic that you were interested in knowing about. So it could be, you know, knowing any particular topic of study today, such as chemistry or biology or mathematics or history, or it could be making it so that way you know how all the facts pertaining to how to build a chair or to make butter or whatever the deal is. It doesn't make any difference for it. The first step of everything is, it's not, and it doesn't, this isn't just about technical knowledge, it's also about your life. So it could be, you know, gaining all the facts that you have about yourself and how you feel about a particular thing and what's important to you and why it's important to you and all these other things too. And making sure that that's a huge part of what's going on, because this is ultimately about the knowledge of the self, of course, as well as the world around you, the microcosm and the macrocosm. And so when you put all these things combined with it, you would gather all the facts, regard for whatever thing that it is, and that would be what's called the grammar stage in classical time period. We might use it, if you're using modern computing understanding of things, the inputting stage, where you put things into the information system for it to determine what needs to be done and what not to be done with that. And then you would make it so that way you could also call it knowledge, just general knowledge. Those are the three main ways for doing it. That's the esoteric version of it. And then the next stage would be the processing stage in modern computing. This would be the understanding stage. And this would be the rhetoric stage and the other traditions for what was going on there. And this is where you are taught to weed out any logical inconsistencies that are happening in order to make it so that way you can go and have a truth discovery mechanism. And so this makes it so that way you would take all the facts, and then what are believed to be facts sometimes, and then you would see if there's any contradictions between them. You would also take out things that have to do with, like, poor arguments, like ad hominem attacks, as an example. We'll go into more of this in detail later on. But you would just go and make it so that way you would have this filtration process of determining what truth is. And then from there, you would go and move on to the next stage, which would be the output. This would also be understanding stage and the esoteric. And this would also be, I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. The next stage in the classical way of looking at things is actually the logic stage. This is where you're taught the various different forms of logic, as well as logical inconsistencies. And then the final output stage is the rhetoric. And so this is how our entire world is built, from the information that we have on hand about any particular given subject, how we are able to process that information or not, which also could be, instead of having knowledge, you're ignorant of a particular topic. And then whatever it is that you know, plus whatever it is that you've been able to process things with and for your understanding of the subject, makes it so that way you get the output. You times this by all the people that there are on the planet, which are currently sitting at around 8 billion people, and you get our collective reality. This is how our entire world is built. And this is also why every tyrant, every dictator in the history of mankind targets the first stage. We know this as censorship. All right? And this is why anybody who thinks that we shouldn't have free speech, doesn't matter whether it's because of so-called hate speech or for whatever reason that's going on with it, you're following in the same footsteps as Hitler and other people that were terrible despots like him. And it is not a good idea to make it so that way people aren't allowed to have access to information, regardless of the reasoning for what it is, because any form of censorship, including self-censorship, leads to us living in a delusional reality and makes it so that way people make poor mistakes and choices that create a bad outcome for everybody involved. This is why tyrants have done and gone after this stage from the beginning, because it makes it so that way every single person that has done this doesn't have access to it. The other thing they do is try to dissuade you from looking into it too. Oh, you don't have time for that. Oh, that's evil, or whatever it is that they tell you to do with it and whatnot. That's why they put these barriers into place, because if you are ignorant of it, then congratulations, you can never come to the correct answer and the correct conclusion on things. And they know that, which is why they target this stage. So that was a little more in depth than I wanted to go into right now, but that's okay. We'll continue on with the show. Next, we have living in the present moment. Living in the present moment is very important, because this makes it so that way this is the only place where we can actually have any change occur. If you're thinking about the past, then you're stuck in the past. If you're thinking about the future, then you're thinking about the future. The past is gone, you can't change anything about it, and the future has yet to happen, therefore you can't do anything about it either for what's going on when you're thinking about it. The only thing you can do is live in the present moment. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying don't plan for your future, because that's ridiculous. What I'm saying is that we need to be smart with this and live in the present moment as much as possible, rather than allowing our past to dictate how our future is going to go. A perfect example of this is, if I'm driving my car, I need the technical knowledge and wherewithal in order to understand how to manually operate the vehicle. But the moment I'm done driving the vehicle, there's nothing else for me to do with that knowledge, and I drop it and I let it go and I put it down and I move on with my life, because I don't need it at this present moment. This is the same idea and concept for when it comes to living in the present moment and being truly in it, when it comes to our own understanding of ourselves and the past actions that we've done and whatnot. And unless there's a reason to be thinking about the past that is important for what's happening right now, then there is no need to bring it up. And we're just wasting our time and spending our precious energy on other things that need, instead of spending our precious time and energy on other things that are more important. And, you know, if I'm talking about a story here with you, because the story is relevant to what the point I'm trying to make, then that's a perfectly legitimate reason for doing it, because I'm actually being in the present moment. On the flip side of things, if I am talking about some future events and speculating about future events that have nothing to do with anything I'm working on at the moment, and I'm just there and it's causing me worry and all of that, well, that's the problem. You're just making it so that way you're making yourself go on a tizzy about things. So, none of these actually help you, for the most part. And no matter what you're doing, any way you look at it, you're living in the present moment anyway. It's just a matter of how nice the present moment's going to be. And the best way to live the best in the present moment is to commit to it rather than thinking about the past or the future. And then, of course, the next stage of this is you need to activate the physical body. I hope this one will be relatively obvious for why this is the case for it. You want to be in the best possible health that you can be. If you're not in good health, then you don't have anything, and it makes it so that way you cannot accomplish your goals in any way, shape, or form. And they wanted people to be healthy in order to achieve their goals, and therefore you have to, you know, have a certain level of proper diet and exercise. You need to make it so that way you're able to think clearly, and certain foods that you eat that are bad for you cloud your judgment and cloud your understanding of things. And so they also, you know, viewed the body as the temple, so to speak, in ancient time periods. And they wanted to make it so that way you lived the best possible life, and that your consciousness was at the highest level possible. Your thinking abilities were able to, the intellect was intact, and all these other things that go along with that. And that's why having the physical body and making sure that you do that and having good health is important, because you want to be able to realize your goals and bring them down into reality as well. And then, of course, a part of the initiations in ancient times were very difficult on the body. And you need to have a healthy body in order for you to go through the actual initiation processes. That'll be talked about later, of course. And so that is another aspect of this that needs to be done with it. Now, a final one, one that's not really talked about in the mystery traditions and or things as an actual step that needs to be done, is what I call true care. This is where you have a yearning desire to actually want to better yourself and the world around you, and that you care about you, yourself, and the results that you get, that you care about other people, and that you want to do the best possible for yourself and therefore make this place better, the world we all live in together better. And so these were the various different ideas and steps that needed to be done. To sum up, you need to have where you believe in a higher power, or that you realize that humanity is not the ultimate authority on things within, and that you're out there to seek truth. Number two is that you need to make it so that way you stop lying, especially to yourself, because this leads to a multitude of problems with the understanding of who you are and what you are and what your purpose is here, as well as to make it so that way you don't delude others and lead them astray and in the wrong direction for things, for themselves. Number three is to make it so that way you stop dreaming, aka cognitive dissonance in modern parlance with modern psychology. This is where you make it so that way you're not disconnected from the reality around you by thinking the world is one way when it's not, or by having logical inconsistencies and contradictions within yourself. Number three was learning how to weed out these things and how to be more honest with yourself and the world around you by learning how to think via the Trivium method. I know we said there was also the Quadrivium method, which I did not really touch on much. We'll save that for another time. And then the next stage of things was to make it so that way we live in the present moment as much as possible. And then the next stage after that is to make it so that way you have your body activated, that it's good and healthy, and that you're strong of will and mind and everything that's attached to the body that goes along with these things. Because if you don't have your health, then you can't really do much of anything anyway, and you need to recover first before you can move on to the next stage of things. And then the next part that I brought up was true care, as I called it. This is where you have to be earnestly seeking out whatever it is that you're seeking out here and why you're taking this journey to begin with. And you need to care and have compassion for other people around you and for yourself as well, because you're going to make mistakes. And that's just the way things are in life. And you need to learn how to not beat others up for their mistakes too much, as well as to not beat yourself up too much over it as well. And so this was the introduction to the initiate's path and journey and the topics that are going to be going into on it. And I will be spending episodes on each one, going really in depth on stuff, why it's important, how come we need it, and that kind of stuff, going into various different aspects of things with it. But this would not be truly fair to you if I didn't at least give you some idea of, you know, the initiation stuff in and of itself. And so there was an event that happened that was called the Living Resurrection, and people had to go through various different levels of initiatory process in order to make it so that way they could go through this particular life, death, and birth, rebirth ritual. and it was done with various different aspects in mind. There was stuff that had to do with various different stars and planetary bodies. This includes Polaris, Orion's Belt. You have the dog star Sirius. You have Venus that were associated with some of these things. All of that was part of the traditions that were going on with it. You had various different symbolic understanding of things that you had to know before going through the ritual, which we will talk about probably in a different season, as well as the initiation process itself. We'll go way in depth in that in another season. This season's actually just focused on the initial preparatory stuff that needs to be done beforehand and how to go and do that. There was a lot of things that had to do with various different cultures all over the world have this. I mean, it's literally everywhere that had this particular tradition. And they did it at various different times of the year, each one having a particular meaning and purpose to it, and each one having different purposes for why, and things of this particular nature that were being done. There was lots of cultures that, you know, had these types of rituals with it. You see this in the Siberian aspects of Russia. You saw this in Old Norse traditions. You saw this and still see this today in certain aspects of Shinto. There's aspects of Chinese culture that still do this today and have done it for thousands upon thousands of years. You get this in the Vedic culture. In India, you had it in ancient Egypt and ancient Sumeria, as I mentioned before, ancient Greece. You had it with the various different Celtic traditions, with the Druids. You have this with the Maya, the Aztec, the Inca, the Olmec, and various other Native American traditions that still do this to this day, in some capacity or another. You have to where this is done by Gnostics traditions and whatnot. You can see this in modern-day Iraq with certain groups that are still of the Gnostic persuasion. The point is that this tradition was everywhere and that it still even exists to this day. And it is still done in various different ways today. It has not died out as many people think that it has. It's on the wane instead of making it so that way it's growing, but it still exists. And even if you don't want to go through the initiation in and of itself, even if you don't necessarily believe in spirituality, like I said before, if you just want to do this from a psychological perspective and elevate yourself for personal development purposes and whatnot, nothing that's done here, that's talked about, that I just brought up, is in any way, shape, or form going to be bad for me, bad for that, if you just want to be very scientific about this, if you will, and very left-brain thinking. Being honest with yourself helps a lot in terms of making it so that way you can regulate your emotions, making it so that way you can go and do better things for yourself, and making it so that way you can take steps to do better for what's going on with that. It's the same thing with your relationships around you. If your relationships are built upon dishonesty, things aren't going to work out. The truth always comes out in the long run for what's going on, and it makes it so that way you're going to be living a lie, and so will whoever you are in those relationships around you, and it will only be causing more problems. So you have that. Then, of course, if you learn how to live in reality and move from fact to fact to fact within yourself as well as the external world around you, that's only going to lead to better outcomes for you in every decision that you make, ranging from personal relationships to business-related stuff and everything else in between. So again, nothing wrong there, even if you just want to do this on the purely the, you know, psychological level and scientific level rather than having any spiritual component to it whatsoever. And then the other stage of this is learning how to think instead of what to think. Again, nothing there is going to be any problematic for you. You can learn how other people lie, how there's other frauds and deceptions that are out there, weed out logical inconsistencies within yourself, and just become a better thinker to help you make better choices and decisions, all going to be beneficial for your life. And then, of course, you have living in the present moment. How many hours have been spent wasting on things that happened in the past that you can't get do anything about and can't change, or about the future or worrying that never came into being? So by living in the present moment and knowing when to, you know, pull from other things when necessary and whatnot that are from your past in order to help do stuff, or to think about the future when, you know, planning certain things that you know are going to come up and whatnot. If you know how to balance that act and make it so you do it the best you can and whatnot, you're going to get way more time back for yourself. And then, of course, activating the physical body. Again, this is about health, which is, it's purely what it is. If you want to, you want to replace that with being healthy instead, and being strong of body and whatnot, and being at a, you know, a good physical condition, fine. There's nothing wrong with that, and is actually part of that. You need to be have your boots on the ground, so to speak, and make it so you actually can accomplish your goals, which is very important. So again, nothing wrong with that there. And then if you want to talk about true care, as I call it, and whatnot, you have to care about whatever you're doing. If you don't care with it, you're not going to give your best effort. And it's not going to do anything that's going that way for it. And so this is going to be beneficial to you. You know, you maybe putting 30%, 40% of your efforts in this stuff because you don't really care one way or another. So that's what true care is about. Is if you care about your relationships, like truly care about them, then you're going to take care of them properly. You're going to make it so that way they function to the highest level that you can. And you're going to give it your all. This is what you want for all aspects of things, to make it so that way things that are really important to you is what you focus on, and that you bring your A game and you give it your 100%. Again, it doesn't matter whether you want to look at this from a scientific / psychological perspective or from a spiritual perspective, that's going to benefit you no matter how you look at it. So this has been the overview of what I'm going to be talking about for the rest of this season. I'm going to be going into these 7 ideas and why more, and trying to make it so that way it can be beneficial to everybody on this particular side of things, and really hone in on what these are and the importance of them, and making it so that way we can get the benefits from it no matter what purpose we're using them for. Thank you for your time and consideration. And if these episodes are being beneficial to you, then please make it so that way you subscribe to the podcast and visit the website, where you can get a free gift that goes over these particular things in a PDF form, so that way you can have it easier for yourself, to make it so that way you know what's going on all the time and can follow along much more easily. I'm Nathaniel Hoitmacher. Thank you for listening to Forbidden Knowledge, Episode 1.